We are born free,
and we will die free.
The time in between, though,
that's complicated.
In that time, governments, institutions, and our egos will limit our ability to find true freedom in this life. These are real stories of real people overcoming the odds, persevering in justice, and unlocking their potential. Welcome to Finding Freedom. Here's your host, John Oderman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Finding Freedom right here on the Lions of Liberty podcast. I am super excited to bring you today's guest, guys. In this today's episode, you know, in the past, when I have talked about things related to COVID, be it, you know, the lockdowns or different policies, but most especially related to vaccination, COVID vaccination, I have danced around a lot of the time. I've danced around specifically talking about it because, due to different censorships on different platforms, mostly YouTube, I have not been as direct. I have self-censored myself at points in time. Other times I haven't. This episode today, there will be no self-censorship. My guest will not be censoring himself in any way whatsoever. Today's episode will not be on YouTube. We're not going to try to do that dance and try to sneak by. We already have our problems with YouTube. We have, you know, perpetually two strikes always on YouTube, so we can't monetize, can't do any of that stuff. But if you want to watch this episode, which if you're listening to it now on a podcast form, you're probably not going to want to watch it, but maybe someone you share it with will want to watch it. I just want to let you know it'll be on our Rumble channel and also on Odyssey. And also, this is a good time to share with you to please go ahead and, you know, follow us on Rumble and Odyssey. We are working on building up those platforms for Lions of Liberty. On YouTube, we have like almost 7,000 subscribers, but we're shadow banned. Everything's all of our videos we post are throttled. We can't do super chats. We can't monetize. So screw YouTube. Go support Rumble and Odyssey. And just one more note before I get to today's guest, I just want to say that if you really are looking for a way to support our show, if you've been listening for a long time, a great way to do it is by joining the Lions of Liberty Pride. You can do so by going to patreon.com/lionsofliberty or lionsofliberty.locals.com. We are so grateful for all of our Lions Pride members. And new, just last week, a bonus for our patrons at the $10 and up level. You get a 15% discount on Run Your Mouth Coffee. Run Your Mouth Coffee is a company founded by myself and my friend Ben Pangey, where we seek to bring you fresh roasted coffee and also uncensored speech. We obviously are big supporters of uncensored speech and all of that good stuff. So check that out. And with that being said, guys, let's get to today's interview with Dr. Richard Urso. Okay, we are live to the Lions of Liberty Pride, and today have a very special episode with you. I've been trying to set this up for a while. We're going to be speaking with Dr. Richard Urso. He's a scientist, the sole inventor of an FDA-approved wound healing drug, and the former director of orbital oncology at MD Anderson Cancer Center. He's also the founder of the Global COVID Summit, which has 18,000 doctors around the world. He believes we cannot use a one-size-fits-all approach to fighting COVID. And today we're going to be talking about the COVID jab. We're going to be talking about the explosion of cancer and latent disease around that, risk factors associated with it. And we're not going to be censoring ourselves. This is not going to air on YouTube, obviously. So we'll just get right into it. Dr. Urso, thank you so much for coming on Finding Freedom.
Oh, John, thanks so much for having me. Look forward to talking. There's so much to talk about, so much to unwrap. Thankfully, the censorship has eased up on Twitter, and it feels like we have a breath of fresh air to have some place to go online and talk and not be censored. It's kind of interesting because I spoke on Twitter and a small podcast the other day, and I found myself in the Washington Post saying that Senator Ron Johnson and Dr. Richard Urso are spreading COVID misinformation. And I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting. Like I get a singled out of all the physicians and scientists in the country and the Washington Post now. So I guess I must be making some headway.
Yeah, well, it's funny. How relevant is the Washington Post anymore? You know,
I mean, well, for misinformation, it's very relevant.
Yeah, but how many people actually care about their opinion on that, right? I don't know anymore. Things have really, really shifted here in the past couple of years. But yeah, we do have Twitter as an outlet. And I forgot, I am streaming this to Twitter as well. Normally, I don't do that. But because of the content of this episode, we are currently streaming to Twitter on our Lions of Liberty Network page. So
hopefully yeah, you should have told me. I could have gotten a lot of people. Yeah, I could have posted on my account. Okay. There would be a lot of, yeah.
We can still retweet it and send it out and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'll do that. Thanks.
But before we get to I was just going to ask if you can give my audience just I know I gave your background, but if you can just talk a little bit about yourself, what really drew you into medicine and some background on yourself.
Yeah, sure. Well, for the most part, I don't know when I didn't feel like a doctor. I don't know when it was. I was talking to somebody about it, and I was saying the other day, I said, you know, I was really into chess at about age 7, 8, 9, Bobby Fischer's books. I used to beat my brother and a bunch of adults. And at some point around age 11, I thought, this isn't that fun. I'm gonna try to cure heart disease. And I got into this whole thing about cholesterol. So I don't know, as far as I'm concerned, I've been a doctor since I was like 11 or so. And then with the COVID system, when it came about, this whole thing was basically, I don't watch regular media. I don't have TV. So I'm kind of oblivious to what most people are hearing. And so I just went about my own way with our team here in Houston. There's a lot of great people that are doctors and scientists that we did drug design with. February, we started looking at this and then thought, hey, it's not going to be that hard. Came up with you said about the one size fits all, always, never, it doesn't work in medicine, almost never. It's an almost never, right? So that's why I don't agree with the one size fits all, because it's almost impossible to make that work. But it became very obvious that we use the same thing we use for cancer cells and viruses are a multi-pronged approach. It's just the way you approach them, because they're very easily mutatable. And so to any treatment you do, they're oftentimes going to mutate. So it became obvious that we had to do a multi-drug cocktail coming at it from multiple angles. There were different stages of the disease. We had to treat the different stages a little differently. And that's just medicine. And we all just put our heads down and did that work. I treated my first patient March 12th. I came out and found a really good success. I reached out to a bunch of people I know in industry. They all told me that they had to be quiet. There's something different. I don't know what's going on. And that's where I became a little bit like, oh, wow, I don't understand what's going on with the messaging in media. And I think at that point, you know, I kind of, in a sense, I got a little scared for a day or so. Like when I put something online, it went kind of viral. And then I had a lot of attacks and stuff. And I was a little bit shook up for a second. But then I was talking with Robert Malone yesterday. And Robert said, well, what do you think about all the attacks? And I said, well, I look at it this way. So sound kind of funny. I go, well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, my whole life I've been the upper dog. And so people attack me sometimes. I don't worry about it. I mean, I don't think about it. It's just... Mm-hmm. It's part of the, you know, it goes with who you are, you know, so I don't mind if people do. And in the science realm, nobody really ever picked on me per se, because they were challenging me, you know. It was more of a challenge, like, okay, well, no, this is the right way to do it. But I think, you know, this is a paradigm shift almost in our approach to pandemics. And that paradigm shift was intentionally bad. It should have never been done. So that's how I got involved. The paradigm shift made no sense. They were saying things that have never been true as if they were true, and they're still doing it. They're still telling people to get a vaccine that doesn't work, and it's actually creating the mutations. And I saw on Yahoo today, they put out a paper, somebody sent it to me, that says, don't believe the people who said that the vaccines are actually causing mutations. They absolutely 100% are causing the shifts in the mutational arrangements of these viruses. Because it's a very one small attack on only a less than 10% of the virus. So when you only attack it from a small angle, this is the kind of results you get. You get leaky vaccines that don't work, don't stop infection, don't stop transmission. and create mutations that are kicking the can down the road, and so on and so on. So that's just kind of a rough idea of how I got started here.
So just to dig into that a little bit, you talked about, you know, really, you know, a top-down approach not really normally working in medicine, or one-size-fits-all approach not normally working in medicine. Why do you think with COVID, all of a sudden, we had to have this one-size-fits-all vaccine approach? Where do you think that came from?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of got to get into people's heads, but it clearly was financially rewarding to many people. The agencies have been bought up by pharma. Pharma's in control of our agencies. End of story. I mean, that's just, and when I say that, I'm not saying that lightly. I'm saying they're paying the bills. And so when somebody pays the bills, they expect results. And that's what's happened. So we have, they got away with fraudulent studies. You know, for people who don't know, the original Pfizer studies, Peter Doshi did great work on it and found 183% more serious adverse events in the vaccinated. And that originally study that they said was 95% effective. So they fraudulently presented the data. It's been a fraud at the beginning. The approach was fraudulent. The vaccine rollout's been fraudulent. They put fake studies like the Lancet study with. The Lancet study was done by the Harvard head of cardiovascular, who about 93,000 patients, of which she saw none, and actually which didn't exist. So, I mean, when you look at what was happening, institutions like Harvard were involved, the Lancet were involved, the agencies were involved. You look and see what, you know, what's happened. They were involved in creating misinformation, or might I say, by the quotes, disinformation, specifically misinforming people. Is now, I think they call it disinformation, the Department of Homeland Security. You've got all our agencies, our FBI, and all these other people that, do you really trust them? I mean, I find it hard that I'm having this conversation, but you know, because 5 years ago, I would have never been talking like this, never. Even though I knew, Of course, there's some corruption in the world. I mean, that's normal. But you know, if you go to a restaurant in New York and you don't want to wait 2 hours, well, you pull out a $50 or $100 bill, and then you know, it's not corruption, but it's like that's how the world works sometimes. But at the end of the day, you know, I felt like I didn't think it was this bad.
Yeah. Well, my father always says, money doesn't talk, it screams. So if it's a $50 bill when you're going out to dinner, or if it's, you know, when you get up to the higher levels of government and paying off pharmaceutical companies, paying off politicians in the FDA, it's all the same. So I want to talk specifically about, you know, really your expertise around this and what you've seen in your practice. What kinds of disease and impacts have you seen your patients come in with due to COVID vaccination?
So, you know, I'll give a circle back to it in a second. Let me give it 30-second kind of thing. Sure. So I've treated about 2,900 COVID patients. And early on, it was obvious that there was a lung inflammatory disease and a big role for blood clotting, big role, unusual for this kind of a respiratory virus. The usual respiratory viruses don't do it. Ebola does it, but most of these don't. And so there was a big role for that. And also respiratory demise, a lot of the asthma meds. So my first big foray was the drug design side, which is basically I've been involved in a lot of different projects. And one of them I individually patented. So, you know, basically I that was where my strength was. But I worked with lipid nanoparticles. So let's get to the vaccine. So one of the problems with lipid nanoparticles, first of all, they're super inflammatory. They're made with polyethylene glycol. The body actually, when you use them, decreases the interferon response just from lipid nanoparticles. It decreases the cellular response of natural killer cells, cytotoxic T cells, macrophages. So you get a downregulation of the immune system just from lipid nanoparticles, right? The other thing is they distribute all over. So when somebody says to you, it's staying in your arm, I knew it was a complete lie. The time I was a little bit curious that maybe they had some proprietary technology that maybe sort of kept it in the arm, but I didn't speak out super strong about that. I talked about some of the other immune tolerance and antibody dependent enhancement issues, which I knew were already well known for single stranded RNA viruses. So there was a lot to talk about surrounding the vaccine as maybe being a problem, and we're seeing it, right? So the big issues are a multitude of issues, but it centers at first on distribution. It's widely distributed in the body. That's why you see a multitude of problems. It's going to the brain. It's going to the heart. It's going to the ovaries, the adrenals. It's going to the bone marrow. It's going to places viruses don't. So that's number one. Number two is we're making a ton of foreign protein. It doesn't shut down production for 2 months or more in many patients. Now, if you were making an inborn error metabolism, right, and you were trying to make a drug for that, it'd be great. It distributes, you know, this would be a protein you need it. It would distribute widely and it'd be made for 2 months. So you get a shot every 2 months. It might be pretty cool. But we're talking about a foreign protein. And this foreign protein was built like a Sherman tank. And I'm going to run through it. Has an ACE2 receptor never before seen on a coronavirus. Has a TMPRSS2 serine protease never before seen on a coronavirus. It has an NRP1 never before seen on a coronavirus. It helps to get into the brain. Has a GP120 fragment from HIV. It's never before seen on a coronavirus. It does this unique thing of splitting the S1 and S2. The S1 gets into the nucleus and downregulates P53, the guardian of the genome, in BRCA. That means tumor, you know, you talked about tumors. That's why we have a tumor uptake in cases, because it's downregulating our tumor DNA damage repair. So we are seeing these happen. And then on top of that, immune viral surveillance is disturbed because of the effects on toll-like receptors. You and I have almost the same exact toll-like receptors. They're pattern receptors that help our body's immune system recognize viruses and other pathogens, and they're being disturbed. So now we have a huge amount, a doubling of shingles, a doubling of Bell's palsy. These are all documented. The shingles is documented, several million patients study. And, you know, so we're seeing big numbers of things that I all said. It's not speculation. It's just, I just gave everybody facts right there. We're seeing.
Just curious there, because it's interesting. We're not hearing any of that stuff in the media, but I'm just curious, when you go to, you know, doctors' conferences or you're talking to colleagues, is this something that you all are talking about, that you're seeing this?
We talk every single day, and like we'll go on today and talk about the EKG changes that they showed in high school students. And somebody called me and said, texted me and said, well, it's only 0.1%. And so I said, okay, so let's talk about that. From 12 to 18, I think there's 28 million kids, right? So that means, you know, so it's basically one in a thousand, 0.1 0.1% is 1 in 1,000. Right. So do the math on that. So if we vaccinate all the kids from 12 to 18, it's roughly, I think, 25 million or so. So do the math, you know, one. So that means two, at least, you know, 5,000 kids would have myocarditis, you know, something like that. So, so in general, we would treat, let's say the vaccine were perfect. What's the infection fatality rate? I have COVID. What's the infection fatality rate from 12 to 18? It's roughly 0.2 per 100,000 or 1 per 500,000. So you're going to vaccinate, you know, 25 million kids roughly, and maybe save, you know, do the math on that. You're going to save not very many. You're going to save 50, but you're going to give, you know, 5,000 myocarditis. You're going to give not only myocarditis, you're going to decrease in all the males. You're going to decrease the sperm counts by 35% for each time you get a shot. And it supposedly covers for all the females. Huge amount of ACE2 receptors in their ovaries, highly concentrates in the ovaries. It's definitely going to cause inflammation. Is it going to cause infertility? I can't say. All I can say is in all the places where they're 80% vaccinated, there's an 8 to 10% decrease in fertility this year. That's just data. Is it mean it's from the vaccine? I don't know, but I'm sure worried about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's so many things to unpack, and we unpack them all the time and try to basically make the links so that we can tell people it absolutely is true, or it sure looks to be causally related. So,
what about other diseases like cancer in people who have been jabbed? Have you seen any increase in likelihood for cancer to return, or for, you know, for for cancer to occur with the jab?
I have seen it anecdotally in my practice. All right. Mm-hmm. The mechanisms are there. So as I said, it's impairing DNA damage repair. There's often mutations going on all the time in our body with cells, and that can get repaired. There's repair mechanisms kind of come in and patch it like a patch in a tire. All right. So that's being disrupted. So this is why we're seeing this huge amount of upticks in cancers. I've seen people in my practice, and after the third booster, I had three come in within the first month that had all been free. I can't remember, it's 10 years and 12 years of tumors. And their tumors came ripping back. And I was like, you got to, I mean, I was shocked. I literally was shocked. It hurts my heart to see it because these are, they've become friends. I mean, these patients, I'm seeing them, most of them I see them twice a year, you know, but we talk because then they send their friends over, they bring their kids in. I mean, it's just, it's a shock because, you know, this is the problem when you're a data guy. You know, they're making it hard for us to get the data, right? But when you're in there with the patients, you feel what they feel. And so that's why you see practicing doctors out here talking about it and willing to stand up because, you know, we're feeling this. We're seeing it. And the data has supported it the whole time. I think one of the things that makes my scientific background a little bit unique for me is a lot of the guys felt like they were right. They were almost sure, but not 100% sure. And I think when you do it, like when you work with lipid nanoparticles and other biologics, you understand it a lot better. And so I already knew that there was going to be problems in production because they just ramped it up. They basically made something in a fishbowl and now they took it and made it in, you know, a vat as big as a, no, not as big as a oil refinery, but I mean, huge vats. And now they're telling people to make a cake basically that have never baked a cake before of this type. So, you know, I knew there were going to be production issues. That's why you're starting to see, for a couple of reasons, problems after this third and fourth jabs. Because one, the production's getting better. And two, you're seeing that class switch, which is another big thing that people may want to hear about on this show, that once you get the third and fourth jabs, you are now making immune-tolerant antibodies. What that means is if you – and this doesn't happen with the flu or tetanus, by the way. This is unique to COVID. Basically, when you get the shots over and over, your body gets tolerant. So let's say you had bee venom. After a while, we know this, right? With bee venom, we use it and we give little bits of it and we basically get tolerance so that when a bee stings us, we don't go into anaphylaxis. The problem here is you're making a foreign toxin protein that's attacking our body. And so what we're doing now is getting this class switch to the IgG4, which tolerates the virus when it attacks us and lets it basically flourish in our body. So we don't actually attack it very well. Thank God some of our T cells are not playing along with that. So our T cells are helping some of these triple and quadruple vaccinated. But the triple and quadruple vaccinated are seriously at much higher risk for dying from this virus right now.
So is that a short term or long term concern or both? Like, for example, say if someone has been jabbed four times and they've decided they're not going to get jabbed again, as time goes by, will, you know, reactions or issues become less likely, do you think?
That's a great question. So I think it's kind of a two-part answer, which you don't really know the answer to. Immune tolerance, you know, a lot of times they keep up these little, you know, bee venom injections so your tolerance stays, you know, low, you know, so you don't go, you know, your immune system doesn't go into hyperdrive. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times that may be true that if we stay away from them long enough, you'll clear some of this. And that's what I think. I think the people who have already taken third and fourth shots, just stop taking them and your body will right the wrong at some point. So your body's smart. You know, God's developed it over, you know, we've been in this world a long time and if you don't challenge it with the same thing over and over and over again, you're basically making the wrong challenge to the wrong virus and you're doing it multiple times and you're creating immune tolerance. If you can get away from that, your body will sense right the ship. There is a little bit of a problem for people over 50 because their T cells are also being trained and naive T cells are not made at past about the age of 50. Your thymus kind of burns out. But the answer to your question is I think we can say we don't exactly know, But my feeling is that if you can avoid them, your body will right the ship at some point. But right now, if you're relatively recently boosted third and fourth shot, you have an immune deficiency, you know, in a sense, a small case of acquired immune deficiency, AIDS.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. So to turn here to talk about recent events, obviously all over the news the past 2 weeks about Damar Hamlin, Buffalo Bills football player, safety, who went into cardiac arrest on the field and has had a remarkable recovery, which I think everyone is extremely happy about. I think he just went home from the hospital 1 or 2 days ago. We're recording this on January 12th for those listening later. With a case like that, I've kind of noticed initially when it happened, you saw reported that they thought it was a case of, I'm probably going to say this wrong, but commotio cordis.
Commotio cordis.
That's close. Which is, well, I'll let you talk about that. You're the doctor. So what is commotio cordis?
So in young, and especially in young athletes, they start even having chest protectors for some of these 11, 12-year-olds when 13-year-olds, they get hit, a ball gets hit and hits the child right in the chest, and it stops the heart basically from the thump, you know, at the right time of the right beat. So basically, this is seen mostly in the younger generation. You don't usually see it in the 20s, but it's a blow to the chest that basically stops the heart. And I think you know, in essence, the issues come down to differential diagnosis. That certainly has to be in there for this kid. Thank God he recovered, because it makes the conversation a little more gentle, and we can talk a little more hypothetically without, you know, feeling like we're creating a news around a story that, you know, had a bad ending. I don't like to do that. So, but basically what I would say is the differential in diagnosis definitely includes commotio cordis, but it should also include the fact that he had the vaccine. We know the vaccine causes myocarditis. We know that myocarditis creates permanent damage to the heart, which means that you're more prone to arrhythmias and heart attacks, in a sense, sudden death from heart attacks. So I think it should be in the differential diagnosis. They could even, he was recently vaccinated, they could have easily drawn some blood and see if there's spike protein floating around. What we saw in children just recently, they just put a study out, that in those children with vaccine myocarditis, they found free-floating spike antibodies in those children in large amounts. And what I always tell everybody, the messenger RNA lipid nanoparticle, there's a couple things. One, the lipid nanoparticle is so good at wiggling into things, right? So it gets into the heart. That's one mechanism, right? But also, it looks like we're getting that production going on for a long period of time, and some of that is ending up in the bloodstream free floating. And spike protein does bind to ACE2 receptors, CD147 receptors. Those cause blood clots. They're red blood cells and platelets. It has multiple ways, and I kind of ripped through a bunch of them, of being able to cause damage in the body. And we know the spike protein from the studies that were done earlier, about a year ago, that basically the spike protein is the main pathogen of COVID itself. So when people say they got COVID, they're basically in a sense getting spike protein syndrome. It causes 95% of the damage. The envelope also causes a little bit of irritation and inflammation. But the other proteins don't seem to cause a lot of damage. On the lipid nanoparticle side, on the vaccine side, the lipid nanoparticle, as I said, is causing its own little set of immune inflammatory issues, with especially the T cells, but also interferon responses. And we're seeing that it's also creating lots of spike protein, more so than what you get from a virus. So I think in general, this kid more likely had a trigger with a hit to the chest, already had some underlying damage, and that's probably the more likely thing. But it's not 100%. Nobody knows. Certainly studies could have been done to kind of, you know, elucidate whether or not there was one was more likely than the other. And I don't think we'll ever get that information.
Yeah. I don't think we'll ever know really what happened there. Like you said, you know, first thing you said was that he's, you know, recovering, which is easily the most important thing.
You know, and just to kind of, you know, John, just to kind of talk about this, you know, J.J. Watt's heart stopped. You know, he had an arrhythmia. He's retiring from football now. There's a kid from a 38-year-old, you know, wonderful guy who, you know, died that same day. It's kind of funny because he bought into the whole shebang, saying even people should be arrested for not taking the vaccine.
Yes, I saw that story.
So, you know, it's kind of a shame because, you know, he's, you know, he doesn't know. He's not a scientist. I mean, he read the papers and he's trying his best, and he thought he was doing the right thing for all of us. And that's the shame of it. People like Fauci know, and the scientists know this is not hard. This is not that, anything I'm telling you here is not, this is not science. That's hidden science. This is well known. Mm-hmm. I think I figured most of it out in about 2 hours.
Do you have a hard stop in 3 minutes or can we go a little longer? What's your,
you can go a little longer. Yeah.
Okay. I'm curious to get your opinion just on where COVID goes from here, and really how we should be treating COVID from your perspective, or maybe what you're telling people in your practice. If someone gets COVID now, there's really the expectation still that, you know, they isolate for 5 days. I think the CDC says 5 days isolate, then 5 days with a mask. I know a lot of people that have had COVID recently. My mom just had it during Christmas, and she's in her 70s, and it was like nothing. And she has a history with pneumonia. So, I mean, throughout the early stages of COVID, we were all very concerned with keeping her sheltered. It seems like COVID has really toned down to being, you know, almost an inconvenience, really just a plans canceller. So is this what you're seeing in your practice, and how do you advise your patients on treatment and what to do?
So first of all, I think there's a lot of fear still surrounding COVID. It's still a lot of fear there. So I think one of the things is allaying the fear. But there are people still dying. So the average age of death is 82. Most people dying have multiple comorbidities. And when I say most, I'm talking about 95%. So in those fragile people that have multiple comorbidities, they should be worried some. You know, that's basically the crew that basically is fragile. They can pass away from the flu and other viruses. We're starting to see RSV, and I had a 78-year-old with RSV. We don't usually see RSV in this population, but this is part of this immune deficiency that we're seeing manifesting itself with many people getting other viruses besides COVID. What we're finding, John, though, is like what I tell people is like, don't just think about COVID. Other viruses cause respiratory compromise and issues, and this array of medicines we have works for those. Single-stranded RNA viruses are all going to be impacted by hydroxychloroquine. Many of the same viruses are impacted in the interferon responses that are seen with ivermectin. Or, you know, we're seeing that many times, we've known this for years, this is like 101 for virology, the inflammatory side of things is worse than the actual disease for a lot of the upper respiratory, especially in like the asthmatics. And so we hit with steroids and other anti-inflammatories. So the approaches should be, you know, people are sick. I tend to treat them. That's what I tend to do. But if they're, you know, 20, my daughter's, she's 30 years old, and, you know, and I, you know, she got it, I don't know, about a week ago. And she didn't really want anything. She said, Dad, what should I do? I said, well, you're gonna survive it. There's some thoughts that maybe if you let it go, there's this thing about what we call long COVID, but this is more fear mongering. She was asking me about it. I said, what happened there was a lot of these patients were in that Delta time when they got sick, they had prolonged inflammation because it was a more severe disease. So this whole long COVID thing is more fear mongering. When you get hit by a car, when you get a bad pneumonia, when you get a bad virus, you're not going to recover in a week. That's not how it works. Your body will recover. Some of the uniqueness, though, of this technology, especially the vaccine technology, there are some other issues with that. But from COVID itself, you're going to recover. All right. So, and this is where they're kind of saying, you'll see this narrative, John. What they're trying to do is say, hey, yeah, they had the vaccine, but they also had COVID. And that's true. Because the vaccine makes your immune system weaker, many of the people who had the vaccine are getting COVID too. And what they're trying to say is, oh, their symptoms are just from COVID. The vaccine kept them from dying. Like they put a spin on it is the vaccine kept them from dying. If it wasn't for the vaccine, they would have died. And now they got long COVID from COVID. you know, if only the vaccine worked a little bit better, they wouldn't have, I mean, they just throw this garbage in there that's completely non-data driven. I don't think I answered your question, but that was my riff on that.
I think you did. Well, but I was just curious about, you know, treatment going forward. You talked about treatment and different cases, you know, if there's, you know, comorbidities involved and age and whatnot. I'm curious about masks. Do you see any benefit to masking?
I've been wearing masks for years, since the early 80s. I worked in a lab, and masks work, but they have to be R99, R100, PAPRs. There are masks that work. I don't know where my surgical, it's not here, but surgical masks don't work. N95 doesn't work. I always joke around and say, N95 works like a bathing suit in the pool when you're peeing in the pool. You can put two bathing suits on, three bathing suits, and that's not stopping the pee. The pee is still going to get in the pool. That's just how that works. And it literally is probably no different than that. This is a greatest way to thinking about it. That's what's happening. It's not stopping it. And in fact, It's pretty good for bacteria, because bacteria are a lot bigger and they do glom onto water molecules. But these are oil capsules, so they don't glom onto water molecules. They in a sense repel water. That's not how that works. So, and let me say this: that's just me theoretically talking. All right, what does the study show? 14 randomized controlled trials, probably over the last 20 years, zero have shown a benefit for N95 and lower masks against viruses. R99, that's a benefit. R100, it's a benefit. So, you know, just because you think it works doesn't mean it works. The data's not for it. It's not there. It's like another fantasy land.
Yeah, it's a I mean, with all the propaganda people have faced in the past, you know, 2-3 years, it's become a safe haven, the mask, for many to make them feel safe. I've heard the mask referred to as the mega hat of the left, and I think it almost has become a virtue signal like that as well, which is unfortunate.
That's well said. I think it really is. I actually think it's a virtue signal, but it's also like, the virtue signaling part is like forcing you to wear the mask. Some people are truly afraid and think it helps. I can live with that. I mean, I gently tell them, you know, it's not that effective. There's randomized controlled trial, but I tend to not go there. I just know they're afraid. They've been bombarded with stuff. But the virtue signaling side of that is, oh, I vaccinated my 4-year-old today. The data is negative in that age group. Like, it's negative data. There's zero. When I say zero positive data, zero. They never showed a single thing that it stopped transmission or infection in any of the studies. It wasn't even the design of the study. They didn't even design the study to do that. I mean, they just designed it to measure antibodies. And as I told you, some of these antibodies are IgG4 class switch immune tolerance antibodies. I mean, antibodies are not the major thing in the immune system for respiratory viruses. IgG antibodies, secretory IgA antibodies are the main thing, right? Mm-hmm. Also, T cells, cytotoxic T cells, natural killer cells, and macrophages. I mean, they're all part of our immune system that's really powerful. I tell people that the cellular response is like the right-handed response, and the antibodies are left-handed. And we're not even making the right antibodies. And sometimes we're making IgG, and it's class-switch immune tolerance antibodies. Sometimes they're non-neutralizing antibody-dependent enhancement antibodies. I mean, you can't just put a broad stroke, say we're going to take this one broad approach, and that even in you look and you unravel that broad approach and you see all these problems with it, just with that alone, never mind not taking a more efficient approach of let's like you asked me earlier, what should we do with these people that are sick? I don't just stay home for a week. All respiratory viruses are gone. When I worked in Anderson, a lot of my nurses would say, hey, I got a pink eye. I'd say, it's not going to jump on anybody. As long as you don't touch your face and you wash your hands, do it. But I said, well, let me tell you what I think you should do. I'm going to tell you, stay home for a week. The patients, some of them are going to die. And the right thing is, we don't need to think there's going to be a thing where they saw with your red eye and they don't know if they died because of that red eye of yours. They just, you know, people don't understand it. That's why I don't beat up on people about the mask too much. That's why, you know, most of the time I tell people, just stay home. You're sick, stay home. We know that mm-hmm. that's going to be effective. Sick people stay home, you know, for respiratory viruses. That's reasonable.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward and simple. I agree. So one last question for you. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about or that you think people really need to know with regards to vaccines or COVID or treatment that you'd like to talk about here before I let you go?
Well, it's so wonderful to be here, first of all. Thank you so much, because we're really – all we're trying to do is educate. That's our main thing. And we do think the people that – our team, like Malone, Cole, Kat Lindley, mm-hmm. Lynn, there's a group that I'm with, and we all are here to give you good information. This is not a financial windfall. This is nothing, zero, all right? Mm-hmm. So I want to just say – I want to thank you, John, for having me on the show. And I want to let people know that the vaccination, I wish it all worked well. Unfortunately, it's a genetic product that distributes widely in your body, produces lots of protein. A lot of the after effects are terrible for the immune system. I do not recommend this vaccine for anyone. And I recommend no lipid nanoparticle messenger RNA vaccines to anyone ever until they can get the pharmacokinetics distribution under control and proper studies done that it's safe long term. And I don't say that because I don't want to like them. I just want to like good science, science that makes sense, where the risk reward is positive. The risk reward, it's highly risky, and the reward is minimal, if any. And in fact, it seems to be negative in weakening your immune system.
Well, thank you, Dr. Urso, for coming on the show. And honestly, it makes me feel hopeful for the future that there are doctors like you out there. Honestly, because if you look at the medical field, and it seems like maybe my perception's off, but it seems like so many got behind this this pharmaceutical push, and maybe they will still wake up and come around to this. Hopefully, they do. But
I'm glad you're going, John. I don't want to cut you off, but I just want to say we got to go straight to people. I can't trust the medical doctors. I love medicine, and I loved it when I was in medical school. I had a lot of great friends. They're scared. They're not willing to stand up. We got to go right to the people. That's why what you're doing is so important. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Urso. Oh yeah, wait, one more thing. What is your Twitter handle? I didn't get your Twitter handle.
At Richard Urso MD, and we have the globalcovidsummit.org website.
We didn't talk about the Global COVID Summit.
No, we'll catch it. It's all right.
Fine. Next time, maybe. Next time.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, doctor. Have a good night.
Yes, sir.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Richard Urso. I said at the top that we weren't going to hold back talking about specifics of the COVID vaccination, of issues with COVID-19, COVID policy, all that stuff. We didn't. We laid it out there. Some of the information that I heard from Dr. Urso, I haven't heard really anywhere else to this point. So I was really happy to bring that to you today. Probably a guy that I will have back on the show down the road. Really had an enjoyable conversation getting to talk with him. And if you watched the video, or if you are watching the video on Rumble or Odyssey, you'll see that he literally just came out of, working. He's in a hospital, just did the interview just in a side room. So very, very appreciative for him taking the time to sit down and speak with me, but more especially to speak with all of you, to speak with the Finding Freedom audience. I'm always grateful to our guests for doing so. And if you liked today's episode, you're going to love the two new t-shirt designs we have in the Lions of Liberty store, where you can find at lionsofliberty.store. We have a t-shirt design that Brian created that said, it's time to make myocarditis Arocarditis, get it? Arocarditis, myocarditis. Anyway, I think it's a witty shirt. It's good. And then you have my shirt that I a quote pulled from one of my recent solo rants, where I said that TV is just filler for pharmaceutical ads. And it really is, if you think about it. You think about cable news, all of this crap that's put on TV, the talking heads back and forth. And what is every single commercial break? Pharmaceutical ads. So go buy this shirt and tell people that you're not dumb by the shirt you're wearing. And they'll get it. They'll love it. They'll love you. And good for everybody. So go check that out, lionsofliberty.store. And I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Hope you enjoyed this interview. If you did, let me know. Follow me on Twitter. Tag me, whatever. Shoot me a DM at John Odermatt. And as always, you can send me guest requests, recommendations, things of that nature, either on Twitter or you can email me, john@lionsofliberty.com. Love hearing from you all. With that being said, hope everyone has a great week this week. Get out there, have fun, and enjoy your freedom, my friends. This is John Odermatt signing off. Always remember to keep your head up and the fire's liberty burning.